This is Mitch McGarry of the Oklahoma City Thunder, and you're listening to the Down to Dunk Podcast.
Welcome to the Down to Dunk Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schleck. Today we have a very special guest. Tass Mellis of the Starters, the former Basketball Jones, is on the podcast today. Tass, how you doing?
I'm great, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
So today, first of all, congratulations on 10 years with your show. And first question, what was the most maybe strange or uncomfortable segment or interview that you've had over the last 10 years?
Okay, good question. Our first one, which we didn't really know what we were getting into, it was the first time I interviewed a player was in 2009, was Tony Parker. We were kind of sort of hunting him down. It was a manhunt, basically. We just didn't know that we just weren't used to the procedures and, you know, going through PR and getting set up and also just not good at the interview process. Sure. So we ended up sitting down, Skeets and I, the two of us with Tony, which was stupid in and of itself. Just because we're, you know, there's no point in having one guy reach across with a mic and taking turns asking questions. And we're in a Subway, a sandwich shop. And so, you know, the whole situation was a little uncomfortable and kind of pointless. But I mean, Tony was great and it went fine. You know, other than that, I think sort of a landmark interview was with Big Baby Davis.
Yeah, I was going to mention this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not an interview, as you know. Yes. It's basically a dance fest.
Yeah.
Because he was teammates with Hito Turkoglu at the time. And yep. I am known to look a little bit like Hito. So, yeah, we had our little dance session. And basically, the awkward part or, you know, the challenging part was, we had told him what we were going to do, but, you know, he shows up, he gets out of a car, and we tell him, listen, I mean, let's make this happen. You know, you don't have a lot of time. Basically, what you're going to do, the first shot is you're going to stand 5 feet away from me on a sidewalk, and you're going to look at me, and the music. We're going to pretend to dance. There's going to be no music, but we're just going to get it on right here, right now, and just dance like crazy. So, I think that was a landmark because that just showed where we had gotten to at that point. For an NBA player to show up and to show his silly side,
yeah,
and just to do whatever we asked was really cool. And for us, I mean, that's what we do quite often on the show. And for an NBA player to partake in that, yeah, just kind of it displayed you know, the name of the Basketball Jones at that time. You know, that was about year 6, 7. And so it took a long time to get there, but, and it probably will never happen again, but, but that was cool. And those were, you know, other than that, we don't do a lot of interviewing. So the moments are few and far between. And quite often the NBA players are, they're amazing, yeah, at just adhering or going along with what we want.
First question about the Thunder. Have you ever met Dion Waiters? Have you ever been in contact with him at all?
Not once, no.
Okay. What do you think of Dion Waiters and his future in the NBA? He seems like he's either going to be like a good six-man role player or he's going to be like Jordan Crawford. And I haven't, and it, week to week, I change my mind on what that is. What do you think his future is in the NBA?
That's a great question. I feel like we're at the point right now where we've had a good couple months. He's more of the former at this point, you know, a guy that's going to sort of hang around some real, you know, focused leaders, and he can sort of follow that line. You know, that's what it's all about. You know, that's why things happen to Jordan Crawford. Maybe that shouldn't have, but if he was in line with, you know, a real A1 type guy, you know, like KD and Russ are, maybe he falls in line a little bit more. So it wasn't working out obviously in Cleveland. But you know, when you have a real championship team and a real run in you, and guys that have been around the block for as long as KD and Russ have, and it's amazing how long they've been around. They still feel like they're really young. I think that's the thing that Dion Waiters needs, and that bodes well for his future. So, as I said, week to week it could change, but I think we've probably had the longest good stretch of his career. And you follow the Thunder closer than I do, to be honest. From game to game, there definitely was some moments at the beginning of the year where he got into Dion mode, which is dribble, dribble, dribble. Don't move the ball and fire an 18 footer for no reason. That happens, but I think he's probably in a good situation to move forward. So if I had to guess, I'd guess the former. I'd guess good Dion.
I love that, because I love Dion Waiters, and I think that he's really a fun player to have on your team. But there's a lot of Thunder fans that just despise this guy and think that they think he's like the worst player in the league and that he can't play. But I would just love to see a successful Dion for this team. Another player that is somewhat controversial in the NBA world is Enes Kanter. And I have a question from at Michael McAfee. What does Kanter need to do to earn more minutes in Billy's lineup?
Well, it's the defensive side of things, right?
Sure.
I mean, unfortunately, it's a simple answer, but it's that's who Enes Kanter is. When Billy Donovan goes into a fourth quarter of close games, it's inevitably going to happen where they're playing whoever it is in the playoffs, and you've got KD and you've got Russ, and you have guys that are shot makers around them in surge, whether it's Dion or Anthony Morrow or whoever, who are you going to put out there in that fifth spot? Like, for stretches, you'll put out Enes Kanter because that offensive lineup is like the death lineup of the Warriors. They can score like crazy, but you have to yank them off and put in Steven Adams, or if you go small, Serge at the five with KD at the four, and you take Kanter off the floor. It's such a monstrous contract, and he's a one-way player, and he's a very good one-way player, but at the end of the day, you got to win basketball games, and you got to play like a team on the defensive end, and him playing against second units is great. So I don't think you really have to worry about Enes Kanter playing more minutes when you've got a great big man rotation and Steven Adams, who obviously is getting better and better and better, and Serge Ibaka, who looks like the best Serge Ibaka we've ever seen. And KD, who's going to play some 4 minutes at the four, plus Nick Collison. I wouldn't worry. You don't have to. You're not the owner. You don't have to pay Enes Kanter. Really, he's earning a ridiculous contract. And I know Zach Lowe called it the probably currently the worst contract in the league on a recent podcast. And it'll look better and better as these years go on, and it's a smaller percentage of the salary cap. But I wouldn't worry about it, really. It's something that's in Enes Kanter that's not, he's not a great defensive player, and I don't think that's changing.
Yeah. What do you think about the low comment? I personally don't think it's the worst contract, because I think that he's contributing, and I think that the coaching staff is really using him well and using him in good spots and making sure that he doesn't get embarrassed on defense night to night. I don't know. Maybe I haven't looked into this enough, but do you think it's the worst contract in the league?
Yeah, it's so relative to obviously other players in the league and where they're slotted in on their team. Enes Kanter on the Thunder, it's entirely fine because he's got two superstar players with him. But I think where Zach is coming from is that if you got a guy making that much money on your team, he's often the number one or number two guy that has to be a two-way player. He's getting paid through 2019, between 16 and like 18 and a half mil. The players above him are all better players and they're all, sure, and they're all generally two-way players, other than probably, Kevin Love doesn't really fit that bill. It's fine on the Thunder. And it's such a subjective thing when it comes to contracts. It's, I think that where Zach Lowe is coming from is if Sam Presti calls another GM and they look at that number and they think, wow, that guy is going to have to be starting, playing 35 minutes. But he's probably in a special scenario in OKC where it doesn't matter as much because of the guys he has in front of him.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And maybe if the Thunder didn't match and he was with the Trailblazers, it would make more sense as the worst contract in the league because he would, I mean, sure. You're right, he'd be playing 35 minutes and he would, his defensive numbers would look really bad. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. What are your impressions of Billy Donovan so far this season? I feel like he's gotten better as the season's gone on, but what have you seen kind of from afar from Billy Donovan?
Well, yeah, I totally agree. He's gotten better as the season has gone on. He's, you know, stopping the KD and Russ on the bench at the same time, which, you know, doesn't make a lot of sense. And rotations have gotten a lot better. You know, the risk taking of that second unit being an entirely new second unit has paid off, which is, you know, that's something which he did, you know, a couple months in. I think it all sort of leads towards or looks like a beautiful progression, you know, but the first couple months, you know, didn't look all that great. And I don't think the guys were necessarily buying in the way they have the last month, but who really cares at this point? I don't think any of the players care. Any of the organization really cares that they're not, or that they haven't played their best basketball quite yet. And I think that's clear. I mean, they're not getting the most out of their lineups. But I do like the change into the second unit that looks like a second unit that can hang with the great ones in the Spurs and the Warriors. You know, you basically just have to play even basketball during those minutes. And, you know, we're always looking forward to the postseason. So, you know, if you have KD or Russ playing with one of these with that unit, do they just keep that plus minus even? And I think they could. And I think Billy Donovan was great to adapt that or adopt that. And guys are starting to buy in a little bit more. So we're talking in January here. I think it's entirely fine as long as everyone continues to buy into a couple more passes using Enes Kanter. I think the key for Enes Kanter is keeping Russ and KD fresh, just using that beast of a man, especially against second units that he should be dominating. So Russ and KD can be themselves come the fourth quarter. I'd always like to see a little more Anthony Morrow. He's my special friend on that team. Like he's the guy that can turn a series around. I feel like if he is in that sort of Patty Mills, just go get it role, you know, just that firing, that guy who fires off the bench. He is one guy I'd like to see in the rotation more, but I think everyone should be happy with the Thunder and how they're currently playing and currently buying into Donovan's system.
Yeah. You mentioned Anthony Morrow and I've talked to Zach Harper and I've heard Royce Young say this, that he thinks their best five is Westbrook, Morrow, Durant, Ibaka, and Adams. Do you agree with that, or would you sub someone else in at the two-guard position?
Yeah, it's all about that shooting guard spot, right? To me, it's I think Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka, along with KD and Russ, are no-brainers. So it's, you know, and the occasional KD sliding up to the four with Serge or Steven Adams. And a couple wings. That's a good question. It all sort of depends. Like if you can get away with Andre Robertson on the floor, I think that might be the best starting five or the best five man unit, I should say. KD needs to be free as much as possible. Why wouldn't you have if Robertson is doing his best on the offensive end, and by best, obviously, he is a little handcuffed in his abilities. But if he's firing from three-point land, if he's not afraid to shoot, And when that's taken away, that he drives all the way to the rim or swings it, he's obviously the best wing defender that they have. So why not throw him out there along with KD and Russ to take some pressure off those guys? It's just his confidence is the question for me. Mm-hmm. If he's confident, the situation theoretically is probably the best. You know, if you can get away with more on the floor defensively, then I mean, you have to have that incredible shooter out there. But he's just never been able to find it. You know, it's sort of like you brought up Jordan Crawford. You look at him, the skill set is incredible. Morrow's obviously a better shooter. His percentages are ridiculous throughout his career. So why hasn't he been able to stay on a floor, stay on one basketball team? I guess it's the defensive attitude and the attitude in general. I'm not 100% sure, but that's a question that I can't solve or I can't answer.
Sure.
It's happened in every organization that he's been in. So I don't know. Maybe he is that sort of figment of my imagination that, you know, he is the 3-point shooter that would complement KD and Russ's driving ability and everyone so perfectly. We had a conversation about Ryan Anderson on our show recently, and it's kind of reminds me of that. Like, oh, he is the stretch four piece that everyone wants theoretically, but it doesn't always work. And so I think that's what Anthony Morrow is, but I don't know. I kind of have faith in Andre Robertson that, you know, if he is that Thabo Sefolosha with confidence, that he could be the guy that they are in fourth quarters with. And I think everyone should be comfortable with that.
Yeah. I've really been impressed with his defense, and he's finding a lot more ways to score. When you park him in the corner, like, he just destroys whatever side of the floor that is. I heard somebody say that his best asset if he's just parked in the corner is that there might be a defensive 3 seconds. I like Robertson a lot, and I think that I thought he would be a little bit better this year than he has been on offense. And I think you can survive playing in almost every series, but maybe the Warriors with him on the floor. Do you think they could win a series with playing Andre Robertson out there against the Warriors?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I think, like we said, I mean, you just have to bring that skill set to the table, and he has to be confident in it. And that's my one concern with him. He hasn't looked all that confident, through this year, through last year. It's just not. He's not getting the most out of his, call it limited abilities, but that's what they are on the offensive end. I don't see why not. If he's the best version of himself, I don't see why not.
Yeah, and some of it I feel like has to do with his teammates, because it either feels like his teammates are either screaming at him to shoot, or they're like looking at him wide open with the ball, and then, you know, second guessing passing him the ball and giving it to Durant or somebody else. Some of it is like being comfortable with your teammates in the new system and just trusting guys. And Durant's been really instrumental in doing that, because Durant passed him the ball in a pretty critical moment in the crazy Portland game the other night, passed him the ball, and he hit a pretty big three down the stretch that didn't end up mattering because Damian Lillard's just ridiculous. But he is probably the best case scenario for them to compete, because he can play such good defense.
Yeah, it's to me, I look back to 2012 and the finals run, and I know we're talking about Golden State and San Antonio and how they're on a bit of a different level at this point, but Thabo Sefolosha turned that series around in the conference finals against the Spurs, just wreaking havoc and being himself. And that's just, again, not hesitating, and we know how Thabo Sefolosha like to hesitate, but that's all it is for Robertson to me, is you got open shots. They're going to happen. You know, we know that they're going to happen, especially with the way Serge is shooting the basketball, which is so impressive. There's going to be space out there. I do think he is probably the best option if he's good enough. Like, I even look at the Warriors and Harrison Barnes, and he's a guy who sort of limited in his abilities. Like he can't be a 1A or even probably a second best player on a really, really good team. But he has so much space out there, So, you know, he gets the ball. It's two dribbles at the most and a pull up, or he gets to the rim, or he fires a three. He just knows what his abilities are. He doesn't do much more than that. And, you know, he's crazy athletic and can finish. But I don't see why Robertson couldn't be not as good as Harrison Barnes. Like, you know, he's not as smooth, doesn't have that talent base, but he could sort of fit in that role with amazing players, getting him space, just be a Tabo Cephalosha for this team, without the hesitancy.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on rookie Cameron Payne so far?
Best bench celebrations in the league. First and foremost, and I'm not talking about the pregame dances, which are great.
Sure.
But the genuine reactions when something great happens, a lot of the times camera is pretty wide and we don't see the close-ups of them, whoever it is, him and McGarry getting up, but they're amazing. They're just having so much fun. And I believe in him being able to run a second unit for sure. He wants to get everyone involved, it feels like. He's got the ability to score. I feel like he's just a really good teammate. He's got really good mentors in Russ and KD. I'm sure they've been instrumental. You probably know more than me on that, but he knows what his role is. He's good at it, and I think he fits pretty well. And I think that's a kudos to Donovan for going that route with a rook.
Yeah, I think so. And one of my friends pointed out that he seems like one of the only guys on the team that maybe there's like four or five guys that really know what Donovan wants to do. And he's able to go out there and execute it with his passing and his ability to space the floor a little bit. So it's been really fun to watch him and replace DJ Augustine, who seemed to, he's a vet. He, for the most part, knows what he needs to do, but his defense was just so bad and he just couldn't get his teammates involved like we wanted. So he's been really encouraging. This is another question from Scott M. McGregor. What's the best part of the Thunder season so far, the mustachioed centers or the Cam and Russ dance offs?
Fantastic question. I'm sorry to repeat my answer, but I think it's the bench celebrations, not Russ and Cameron Payne freestyling. And I believe it's, the majority is freestyling. Yeah, they got a little bit of a sort of rapport routine where they kind of know each other's moves. Mm-hmm. But, I think they take it to another level with their spontaneity. But I think down, down 50 feet, down on that bench where it's sort of genuine joy when somebody makes a great play and guys just get up. I think it's McGarry definitely contributes a bit, but I think Cameron Payne steals the show on the bench. To me, I'm always watching for it, especially with at home, they get up and have a, they just have a ball, and it's fun to watch that team and just the entire unit. They generally seem to really, really like each other, and it's the reason why, a lot of people aren't giving the Thunder a real chance of knocking off the other two teams, the Spurs and the Warriors. I generally feel like this is a team that really likes each other and are on the same page. And yeah, they haven't reached the level of the Spurs or the Warriors whatsoever, but I feel like they are on a mission like those other two teams are. And, that shows in the mannerisms on the bench. Like they just really, really like each other and are going for that same goal. And that's why I'm always keeping an eye on it. I'm always ready to vine.
There's lots of vineable moments with the Thunder bench.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like some more close-ups on that bench because it's not the best of camera angles, so it doesn't really show it off as well as it should. But that's my favorite part of the year.
A couple league-wide questions. Who would you rather see get the eighth seed, Utah or Sacramento?
So it's a loaded question on my end because I've been a little bit hard on the Kings this year, and I, you know, just like sort of everyone has. That's really interesting because if the Kings miss the playoffs, I genuinely don't know what they're going to do with Rajon Rondo, who's a free agent this offseason. I know DeMarcus Cousins loves him, so that means he would likely come back. But I'd rather see the Jazz in there just because the way they held on to that eighth spot with Rudy Gobert down, with all their injuries, you know, there's just more of a future there at this point. They just have a better roster top to bottom than the Kings do. And it's kind of fun when the Kings are sort of in turmoil just to keep an eye on what's going on. So I'm really genuinely, I don't know. I'm kind of perplexed. I don't know what's going to happen with that Kings team if they miss the playoffs, even though, you know, they're knocking on the door of the postseason. They started 1-7 and have played 500 ball since. So they have a real shot of getting in. But it, you know, the Jazz, the way they held on without major injuries, which the Kings haven't had to overcome. I think I'd rather see one, just like the sort of the Pelicans last year, the Jazz squeeze in and get some playoff experience. But the Kings have definitely overcome and played above expectations to this point.
Yeah, I think the Kings may be weird if they make or miss the playoffs, because if they make the playoffs, they may try to get some more established players in the offseason, kind of like they did in this past offseason, but just kind of add to it and think that they're better than they are, kind of a la the Suns. Or if they don't make it, yeah, you're right. Who knows? Like, what do they do with Rondo? That front office is just so strange. I really have no idea what to expect from them.
Yeah, no one does.
Yeah. who's the most surprising team? We mentioned those two teams are kind of surprising in their play, but who's the most surprising team to you this year?
Can I say the Warriors? No, I won't say the Warriors. The Rockets, to me, I know it's amazing. You know, you got guys coming into preseason, like James Harden, saying that it still doesn't sit well with him. That wasn't the MVP. So you'd expect that to turn into a guy who plays hard, and that hasn't happened up and down that roster. To come into the season and lose three games by 20-plus points, and for them to really have been able to pick it up quite yet, you know, they've gotten back to, you know, just above 500 at this point, but I don't know. I mean, it's something that, you know, like the Warriors, first of all, the Warriors win the championship, but then they can use the fuel of people saying that they were lucky. Well, a lot of people, including myself, thought, you know, the Spurs and Clippers would have given the Warriors a tougher challenge in the conference finals, and that the Rockets were sort of lucky to get to the conference finals. You'd think that they would come out firing, and with that much talent, it's that's definitely, I can't believe that we're, you know, 2+ months into the season, about 2.5 months into the season, and they still haven't found their way. You know, they got Kevin McHale fired, and really had nothing to do with the coach. That team just wasn't ready. And, you know, they all sort of used the excuse of training camp and that guys were injured, but that should not play into effort on the floor. And I think a second team would be the Pelicans, but they actually had the excuse of injuries, but again, they haven't been able to find that energy level, that give a care level that teams need if you're going to take the next step. And I thought the Pelicans would be that team that would be a lock for the postseason at the very least. But again, they do have that sort of baked in excuse of being injured and a lot of their guys being injured.
Mm-hmm. The Rockets are another interesting team about their, just talking about future of teams. What do you think that they keep Dwight Howard? You know, what do they do with their fours that are going to be free agents this offseason? I think their futures looks pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, it's murky for sure. What is the core of that team? Really, you could look at it and say, do they keep anybody besides James Harden? Isn't everybody around him tradable? And I think what it comes down to is what James Harden wants is what James Harden is going to get. That's what it seems to be like in Houston. If I don't know, Dwight and him don't seem to be on the best of levels. Like, they just don't seem to be that friendly. You know, this is from the outside looking in, but that is a serious psychological examination that needs to happen in that locker room. Like, somebody needs to write like an oral history of this season. Like, these guys just don't seem to like each other all that much. If they're not playing for each other, there seems to be just sort of a disconnect between the players. And up and down the roster, you're right. Ty Lawson doesn't seem to be in their future plans. Trevor Ariza, a guy who works his butt off every single day and is an NBA champion as a starting small forward, you'd think he would be working his butt off at all times, but even he gets lax on the defensive end. So there, I think there's some serious chemistry issues. And I don't know, those forward spots, Terrence Jones and Thanasis Matiunas look like guys that are capable NBA players but aren't utilized all that effectively there, and haven't been given a big role. It is a strange roster up and down. They continue to look for a star, obviously, to slip into that four spot. I don't know if they go crazy and grab a Markieff Morris that's unhappy in Phoenix. I don't think so, because there's just so much turmoil in Houston. I think Daryl Morey realizes that, and he won't bring another guy who's a malcontent at this point. But yeah, you're right. I mean, your guess is as good as mine with what they do going forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, I guess they max out Dwight Howard. I mean, someone's going to. I think that's, I mean, it's kind of a scary proposition to me. But what else do you, don't know what else you do.
If you're the Rockets?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a tough one. You know, we're talking about a Dwight who, you know, he'll be 30 at the end of the year, turns 31. Like in 11 months or something like that in December. And obviously his best years are behind him, but he is, if Steven Adams were to get to that sort of impact on either end, I mean, he's not obviously as athletic as Dwight, but that's the goal, right? It's like a guy who can finish, a guy who affects shots, a guy who boards, and a guy people are sort of frightened of. But it's just, how long can he do it for? I agree. I mean, I think he's, you know, one of the top few centers in the NBA when used effectively. You know, you have to put him in that in the grouping with, you know, Marc Gasol and those guys. But he's not being utilized effectively, and he's injured. Let's be honest, he's not the same guy that he once was. He has to sit out a lot of games, so. Yeah, I guess somebody maxes him out, but I think somebody who would sign him other than Houston has to give him 4 years. You probably feel a lot better than that rather than Houston giving him 5 years. It's a really, really, really good question, because it's maybe he'd be the worst contract in the league. Take it from Enes Kanter if he signs a 5+ max. So, but I say that, but I love watching him in the postseason. He is still an impactful guy when he knows that he can just give it as much as he can, and he was really good in the postseason last year, and good in the postseason the year before that, even though it lasted one round. He's still a very good player. It's just, I don't know. If you're a front office, you would have to do some serious due diligence looking at his body type and all the injuries and how much he has to give going forward.
Yeah, I wonder what this Rockets team is even capable of in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just because they were so good last year. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they're pretty much the same except for Josh Smith. And you would think, like, wow, like, Josh Smith can't make this big of a difference. It's just It's just a very, very strange season for the Rockets.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is does James Harden want to be – is he capable of being a superstar on the level of the superstars in this league who do it day in, day out? Because he's not this season. But he was last year, as you mentioned. I mean, for some reason, he turned it on, and he was one of the best players in the game. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen that. It's boring to talk about, but it's that consistency day in, day out. That's what superstars are made of. And James Harden has not shown that, even though he was that last year. He hasn't done it 2 years in a row. That was his best year last year, and he has not been that guy this year.
Yeah. I did a podcast for Vantage Sports last week, and we talked about who is the second best team in the East. And just digging through the stats, we determined that we think it's your hometown Toronto Raptors. Do you agree? Do you think it's somebody else? Who do you think is the second best team in the East?
I'm not going to name the Toronto Raptors as the second best team in the East, just because they have all the ingredients to be that team. But I think I'm just lowering my expectations because I've been heartbroken before.
Yeah.
and watching this team in the playoffs last year and losing home court advantage or losing both games at home to start the series and then getting swept. Although they've done a great job, Masai Ujiri said, I mean, what are we? What can we be? Let's get some defensive players to change that chemistry or change the way we go into playoff games. Because he did that, it looks like a team that can kick butt in the postseason and probably be the second best team. But I'm not going to say that because they don't have the – they just don't have not just the experience, but they just don't have the track record that other teams do in the East. So I think I would guess right now that probably – If they can find it, it's the Miami Heat. And I know I'm going a little off the board there, but I'm worried about the Bulls' chemistry. And again, the Raps can be very good, and it wouldn't be surprising to see them as the number two team. But I think the Heat, if they can sort of keep it all together, they have so many great parts. And I think Dwayne Wade's taking care of his body better than he ever has in his career. Chris Bosh is a real superstar. And then they have guys that around them like that can do the job. And again, we're all sort of reaching for the second best team in the East because we want to see some actual competition in the Eastern Conference playoffs. We don't want to see the Cavs just walk to the finals. But you look up and down those standings, and you know we can all make that prediction now. But I don't know, would anyone be surprised if somehow even the Pacers pull it off? But I think that's they're a piece away for sure from being a contender just because they're pretty thin. But there are a lot of good teams, and that's what the funny thing about talking East versus West is. People say that the East is better than the Western Conference this year. Well, yeah, sure, record wise, if that still holds true. But all those teams are on pace to win 50-ish games while you've got three teams in the West that, could kick the snot out of all those teams, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the league is really – it feels strange this year because there's just so many mediocre teams, and then there's like I think you could probably narrow it down to just those four teams, the three in the West right. And the Cavaliers. And then everybody else is just kind of they're pretty good, and they'd probably be pretty fun to watch in the playoffs, but they just don't have a chance. And so it's really – to me, it's one of the stranger years because the West, I mean, going into the season, you're like, oh, my gosh, this is so stacked, like the Clippers and the Rockets and, who knows even what the Utah Jazz can do. And it's just turned out to be, it's these four teams and we're just kind of waiting for the playoffs to start to see how that all unfolds.
Yeah, the Western Conference has been very disappointing when, aside from the top three teams. The Grizzlies have been really disappointing the way they came out so flat. Mike Conley doesn't look like Mike Conley at all. Marcus Gasol didn't look like Marcus Gasol at all. And there's definitely rumblings of some chemistry problems there. Obviously the Rockets. I think the Clippers, they haven't been incredible. Still on pace to win more than 50 games. But they've just been heartbroken a couple times by the Warriors. And it feels like even though this is a good team, they almost know within themselves that they're not good enough. Mm-hmm. So every time they lose to the Warriors, it just kind of sets them back a little bit. But I don't know. I think they've had to rally around each other when Blake went down and they won 10 straight, and that's probably helped. But I don't know. I had faith in that team, and DeAndre Jordan hasn't taken that next step that he kind of needs to. He kind of needs to be more of a star and demand the ball a little bit and punish people down low to take the pressure off Blake and CP3. So that team is really, really interesting to me because they have the pieces and like the Raps, who I'm going back to the Raps because I feel bad for for not giving them the due that they're probably worth. If Damari Carroll is healthy, if Corey Joseph is healthy, those guys on the perimeter, they've actually made the Raptors fun to watch this year. And Lowry and DeRozan are great, but at times the worry comes with the way they play. It's really one-on-one, and it's not anywhere close to the rim, although DeMar's having a really good year. It's just the worry that they don't move the ball enough. And, you know, hopefully with Damari Carroll on the floor, when he gets healthy, they become the best version of themselves. But they haven't been quite yet. And there's flashbacks of Kyle Lowry trying to do everything and DeMar trying to do everything and not utilizing the other three guys enough. So they need to be more of a team to battle in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Last question. Where does Kevin Durant sign his next long-term contract?
So are you throwing in that caveat of long-term because you think there's a potential of a one-year happening?
It seems like that would – Zach Lowe wrote about it. Everybody talks about how it's just the smartest financial move to make. It's just a one-plus-one and then opt out and then – and then see what happens kind of deal, because he can get, you know, a bigger percentage of the cap and all that jazz. So,
yeah. It's funny because, you know, I definitely think of him as, and the times that I have met him, he's definitely a genuine, you know, for lack of a better term, like a Johnny Basketball, a guy who just loves the game, who's there to play. And you guys know him extremely well, and you know that that's what he's there for. So I feel like if he puts his pen to a contract with the Thunder, I feel like he's going to stay there for a long time. I don't feel like it's a one and bounce type scenario. I don't think that's him. And I would guess, I don't think you can really guess anywhere else besides Oklahoma City at this point. I just don't, and I'm not, I say that on our show as well. I'm not just, you know, blowing it up your ass because we're having this conversation. I just think that he knows, you know, going home isn't that fun. The Wizards haven't done themselves any favors, as we know. He's just such a loyal guy. I don't know. I would guess Everything says OKC, you know, and he's got that mean streak in him that to prove people wrong. And I think he genuinely loves Russ, and, you know, Russ will still be there, obviously, past this year. If he really wants out at some point, he can always say, hey, I'm out of here. But I don't know. He's just loyal to his guys and that team. At this point, you know, we're midway through the season. You know, on pace for about 60 wins, like they always have been. I think he's smart enough to know the grass isn't always greener. He's got a guy beside him, you know, that's top five, top six, however, whatever arbitrary number you want to throw at Russell Westbrook. You can't go anywhere and just get that. I mean, the talk about Golden State is crazy interesting, obviously, for him to be there. But I don't know. Is he a guy who's just wants to go kind of, not that he wouldn't be featured, but fit in more on a team that where he's not as big a superstar, you know, to the smallest degree, but, you know, wouldn't be his team, wouldn't be the one that he came up with to lead to a championship. And that's just the purity that is Kevin Durant leads me to believe that he wants to stick around and take a team from, you know, whatever it was, 20-62, I think he was in his rookie year, to the championship. I think there's a quality about him, and there's, you know, a pretty real fabric in Kevin Durant, which we don't see in other guys. I don't see him jumping just cause, if this is a good team that makes a decent run, you know, if they don't fall apart for some weird reason, which they're not, you know, even if it's a second round exit, I see them legitimately keeping KD around and going forward with what they have.
This is a wonderful answer. I really hope that is the case. And it feels like a bunch of the suitors have kind of almost died this season. Like you talked about the Wizards, like that doesn't look appealing. The Rockets were somewhat of a contender to at least get a meeting with them, and that doesn't seem appealing at all. The Heat haven't been quite as good as people thought they might be. So I think that's also helped, and it really does look like it's two situations that would be good or better for him in Golden State and Oklahoma City. And it just, you're right, I just don't think it really fits for him to go to Golden State, just personality-wise. But
Yeah, like, well, I'm not, you know, inside the inner circles of the NBA. I don't speak to front office people and all that often, you know, or ever. And so they may have a bit of a better feel for this Golden State Warriors rumor, which by all accounts is a real rumor. You know, aside from the Wizards, the hottest one seems to be the Warriors. But I don't know. They seem to have gone away with the Thunder getting it together. And, you know, it's just, it's like the LeBron situation in a way where, yeah, he won a couple in Miami. But one in Cleveland is worth like three or four with the Heat. And, you know, and if KD goes to Golden State, it's like, all right, you won. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. But if you pull it off in Oklahoma City, it's you just have to win one, and you know, you never obviously buy yourself anything for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You know, there's just that connection with the city and KD. It's, I don't know. You know, maybe I'm being you know, just a little hopeful and naive to think that guys know that the game is bigger than them and don't want to just buy their way or you know, move their way to a championship. But Kitty seems to be, if there is one guy to be naive about, it's probably him.
Yeah. In 2011, you came to Oklahoma City for your No Season Required tour, which I attended. It was at one of my good friends, Dusty Gilpin, his t-shirt shop. It was super fun. You guys gave us beer and it was a great time. But your story kind of leaving Oklahoma City is that you saw a tumbleweed and, you had a really weird cab ride. And so my question is, will you please give Oklahoma City another chance? Because I don't think that you experienced the best of it.
You're 100% right. I didn't experience the best of Oklahoma City. And all that it has to offer, I'm sure. I think, Andrew, what needs to be said is that, you know, we were on a 35-day trip, and it was probably, you know, our lowest point at that point. And it was I don't mean geographically,
okay,
culturally. It's strictly speaking from logistical. Just where we were at this point of our trip, you know, we didn't know if the NBA season would come back.
Yeah.
I'm just making excuses, basically. Yeah. I think we had a really good time in OKC, but it's always fun. It's always fun to, you know, kind of poo-poo on a city when you do see a tumbleweed. I mean, yeah, that was amazing, and it's something that I think Trey Kirby brought up on our podcast a few months ago, and I'd totally forgotten about it, but you know, we were asked, you know, what's one thing that you'll never forget about your career with the Starters, and he brought that up, and that's entirely fair. I mean, that was we were in a car and we saw a tumbleweed pass us. We thought we were sort of on a main road. But I don't think we were, and definitely OKC definitely has a lot more to offer than we experienced. But we did have a good time there for that show. We learned that Royce Young really likes eggs, and we did have a blast. It was a fun. I bring that up about being the lowest point. I don't really remember what the lowest point was, but it was tough going, you know, that 35 days going city to city, and I'm not complaining by any means, but,
yeah,
you know, you want to have fun in every city, and you think you're younger than you probably are, although, you know, I was in my prime, prime in 2011. Yeah. I'm on the Dwight Howard side of my career. But it was it was a little taxing, and it was Oklahoma City was good, and that environment was actually was pretty cool. So it was nice and intimate and a good time.
Yeah. Well, Tass, thanks for coming on the podcast today. Again, congratulations on your 10 years with the Starters / the Basketball Jones. I know for me, I wouldn't be doing a podcast right now if it weren't for you guys. So thanks, and hope you guys have a great week.
Thank you, Andrew. That's always to me the best compliment that we can get is, you know, a few guys who decided to try something and really go after what they wanted has led to other people you know, looking at themselves and being like, hey, if these goofs can do it, why can't we? And it definitely, I mean, that's the best compliment. And you know, kudos to you for going this long. I remember emailing with you way back when you started. Yeah. So, you know, this is it's an accomplishment to get to this point for sure.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Tass.
All right, Andrew. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.